Not you. Not you. Talking to my monitor. I'm trying to adjust my computer to get a better angle, and then like my monitor decides to crap out on me.
I'm recording now, so that's great if you just said fuck you to me.
Fuck. No, I'm saying fuck you to our listeners. I'm kidding. I love you guys.
Yeah, fuck you, all of you.
No. Okay, hi.
Every single one of you.
This is the Conservationist Conversation List. I'm Aiden Wood, and this is my co-host.
I'm her co-host, Brandon Enyart.
Okay, that's not exactly how you usually do it, but
I like that opening. It was something new. Oh my, sorry, I just got a notification on my phone. So I hate it now that my bank gives me notifications on my phone, because now I can actually see how much money I'm spending. And I don't like it. I'm like, stop telling me.
I needed to do that. I like that saved my ass. Like I would be spending so much more money if I didn't have that. I'd be like, your balance is $20. Like, okay.
I love it too. No, I was going to say, I love it too, because my brother is on my iTunes account. And so he'll like buy stuff on like, you know, Pokemon Go or stuff like that. And it'll show, I'll get these random like Apple iTunes, $2. And it's because he's bought like Pokecoins on Pokemon Go. Yeah. So how's life, Aiden?
It's.
That sounds like you're opening a can of either.
Whoop-ass.
I was gonna say whoop-ass. Boy, no. That's like throwing it back to the late '90s. A can of whoop-ass or a can of. You were born in the late '90s. How do you even remember that? Soda.
It was used longer than that.
Was it? I feel like it like went out after like, I don't know, the Budweiser chameleon.
I think my mom said it sometimes.
Your mom is. You posted a picture of your mom Mother's Day. She's cool as fuck, by the way. And so
my mom is the coolest person in the world.
Yeah, mine's all right.
Your mom is also extremely cool. Your mom is the second coolest person in the world.
I know she's listening, so like I figure that like if I say this, she's like, oh, what? No, I'm kidding. Mom, you know I love you. You're the best.
What's this podcast even about? Okay, you asked me how I was. You asked me how I was. I am in podcast hell. I've been like the last two or three nights I've been sleeping like five to six hours, like really restless, like nightmares. And because I've been drinking like coffee and beer right before I go to bed, because I'm like, and I'm like staying up until like I usually try to go to bed around like 2:30 a.m. to get up at like 8:30 a.m. So I'm trying to get 6 hours, but then I'll stay up for like 2 hours, like just like lying there like.
Right. Yeah.
And then
I was going to say I stopped forcing myself to go to sleep because it was worse. That's why I started to develop insomnia. This is terrible. It's actually kind of funny. But I downloaded the Bible app on my phone so that I could be bored to sleep. I would like start reading passages. I'm so going to hell now. I just read it until I ever get tired, and I'm not kidding.
God is dead, and you, Brandon, have killed him. You personally.
Oh boy. So how's it been in California? It's here. We've had some rain. We've had some sunshine.
Sorry, I knocked my microphone. I'm really low on sleep, so like I'm gonna knock my microphone, and I'm gonna not know what I'm talking about, and I'm sorry, guys.
I feel like it's always great to talk about weather when we start off, because one of these days we'll go through all these, like one episode after the other, and it'll be like, you know, we'll be like, how bad did climate change start to affect the podcast?
It's actually a fun idea, because like there was like I read some article at some point about this, so it's probably bullshit, because that's how it is when you read an article at some point about something. The thing is bullshit and you're pulling shit out of your ass. But anyways, I did read an article at some point that said that people, like, part of why people underestimate the impact of climate change is because they don't remember what things were like way back when. Like a decade ago, like people will be like, oh, a decade ago, like there'll be like a heat wave in like April in Michigan, and people will be like, this is normal.
Yeah, right.
And then at the same time, people will still be like joking about like, oh, our Michigan weather, like we get like all this like, but whatever, it's like snow, like we have like the longest winter, but then I'll like go to Michigan for like Christmas and there'll be no snow, and there will have basically been no snow.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid. Reason I remember this is because every year, the one thing I look forward to, because we lived on a farm, we didn't go on vacations very much, so I look forward to going to the San Juan Islands every year. And I remember this because in June is when we would go, because that's when the orcas would come back to the area. And I remember years where my mom and dad would be like, well, we are not going to go if the weather is really, really bad. And we'd have these years where it would be still like snowing in the mountain passes in June, and it'd be really, really rainy. And now, because we're so used to how warm it's gotten early here, in fact, we even had a February a couple of years ago where we had 70 degree weather and the flowers were already blooming. And now it's like, if we don't get warm weather in April and May, we go, what's happened to Washington? But really, that's, you know, we used to say July 4th was the start of good weather here, because we'd always have a shitty July 4th, and then the summer would kind of start for a few months. Now we get a summer that starts usually in late May, like right now we're finally in the warmer weather, and then we usually get a couple of nice months, and then we get the smoke season because the wildfires go crazy. And they're already going crazy in BC, which, you know, where a lot of the smoke comes from up here. And Washington, you know, Governor Inslee has already declared a state of emergency regarding the drought, or at least he's alluded to that he's going to do that.
There's a state of emergency. That's the Washington governor?
Right, yes. Who's also running for president, yeah. One of them,
he is?
Yeah, one of the, like, million guys who's and gals, guys and gals, who are running for president.
Why?
So here's the interesting thing about Governor Jay. Should we jump into the jungle for this? Let's do it.
Let's go to the jungle.
So here's the interesting part about Governor Jay Inslee. AOC, she actually, that was the first presidential hopeful that she actually spoke of and sort of, I won't say endorsed, but said he has the most comprehensive and best climate policies. And she did that over Twitter the other day. So our own Governor Jay Inslee, I've been very hard on Jay because Jay has been, to me, a big talker when it comes to climate, and not always doesn't always back it up. I haven't felt like here in Washington, and but I mean, if you look at it compared to other states, maybe I'm just, you know, demanding too much out of the guy. I don't know. He also didn't. I wasn't happy with the fact that even though Washington was, I believe, somewhere around 70% or more in favor of Bernie, that he, along with other superdelegates from the state, decided to go against the people of the state and become superdelegates for Hillary. And so that, I think I held that against him for a while. But he has also been very good with health care as well. So, I mean, Governor Inslee is definitely not the worst candidate, that's for sure.
And yes, Jay Inslee. Okay. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you've talked about your governor like before on the show. I'm pretty sure I still feel like this is the first time I've heard of him. That he wants, the last news article that comes up for Jay Inslee that related to his presidential campaign is 5 days ago.
Right, and he's been talking about...
Well, like maybe 3 days ago. Yeah, four. Yeah, three, four.
I think AOC was talking about it on her Twitter. I want to say it was like last week. All the days have blended together lately. I think it was sometime last week after we recorded last week's show that she was talking about his climate change policies. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to be able to get onto the debate stage. I know he was still asking for donors last week, so I'm not sure how far Jay is going to get. But it is interesting because I don't think Washington's had a legitimate candidate. As far as I can remember, all the way back. You know, we had Governor Gary Locke and Governor Christine Gregoire. And they were, I met Christine Gregoire's husband. I have a picture of myself with her, with her husband. And, I can't remember any of them ever thinking about a national stage. Governor Locke, I do believe, went on to be an ambassador for ambassador for China for Obama. And that was like the closest we got to the, large stage, the main stage of the presidency. But yeah, also what happened this week though, as well, Bill de Blasio announced that he's running because why not, right?
Yeah, I don't even know if that was this week or like earlier than that, because
it seemed like this week for me, because I had no idea until you just told me.
Yeah, I mentioned like, hey, how about Bill de Blasio? I'm pretty sure when did Bill de Blasio.
The question. So when I looked it up, right, what was one of the first articles that came up when I looked it up? This is the headline from it. Bernie Sanders, Bill de Blasio are least like 2020 Dems poll finds. Brutal new 2020 numbers for Beto O'Rourke and Bill de Blasio. Now, the first one was a Fox News article. The second one, Washington Post.
Yeah, now, I have a New York Times article. He apparently announced his candidate, I think, on the 16th.
Okay.
That's when the New York Times article was posted.
So. Okay. Yeah, so that...
within the last week.
How many of these people, too, announced that they ran, like, a few months ago? We didn't know, and then some of them we thought announced, and they didn't, and then they just... So, I mean, who the hell knows? But it doesn't surprise me if people would say that Bernie is one of the least like Dems, I think, because there is so much... there's so much animosity against him as much as there is favorable attitudes toward him. So that doesn't surprise me. Bill de Blasio, I'm not sure people really dislike him so much as they just don't know who the fuck he is. I mean, we know who he is, but like why the fuck he's running, I should say. And I think because at this point, when you announce that, it's been how many months now? We've talked about this. People are going to think it's a broken record, but we've talked about this now every single week that we've done the podcast about how we have so many different candidates, you know? And you would think that you just go, why the fuck are you doing this, de Blasio? Like, why? Like, you're killing me, Bill. So, yeah, he's, of course, right now, Biden's leading all the polls. We know that. We'll see where that all goes. Yeah. So I have no idea where this is all headed, except that I just want things to like start to weed themselves out, like as we get to, you know, debates and such. But
yeah.
So that was Beto. Amazingly, we thought that he was going to be, and we never know, things could change in the next few months. But I think a lot of people thought he was going to be one of the bigger names because he just had that charisma about him. People liked him. But Beto is struggling heavily right now. And,
yeah, I think that he was not ready for this.
No, he. I mean, he's forgetting that he was entering a race in Texas against a candidate like Ted Cruz, who although has won many times because of how red that area is, we have to remember Ted Cruz is so unlike that a fellow Republican said if somebody shot Ted Cruz on the Senate floor, nobody would go to check to see if he was okay. So if that doesn't tell you how much people like Ted.
He also just has a really ugly face. Like, I don't like saying that stuff about people. I don't like saying that stuff about people. It's just that, like, it's not even, like, his face itself. It's that he always looks vaguely smug.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like, also, 100% like, vaguely right. Like he has really bad gas. And it makes me deeply uncomfortable.
I don't doubt that he does have very bad gas.
I'm sure he does. He looks like a Lego brick. He's like really, like weirdly square. Like, I don't know. Are you looking at a picture of Ted Cruz right now?
No, I'm actually going to find, because I think speaking of Ted Cruz, we have something to say about Ted too. Ted.
Yes.
No,
we're talking over each other so much today.
It's okay. We're, you know,
we just have a lot of feelings.
We do, yeah. So this is off of Sierra Club's In Case You Missed It section, which is a great, great section for those of us who don't have a lot of time to go over all the articles, and they put it all into one nice and tidy little area. But this is from Jeff Faust Twitter. He's a senior writer at Space News, Inc. Retweets aren't – okay, that's his bio. Subcommittee Chairman Cruz, this is what he said. This is his full quote. Nations have recognized the necessity of naval forces of maintaining a superior capability to protect waterborne traffic and commerce from bad actors. Pirates threaten the open seas, and the same is possible in space. In the same way, I believe we too must now recognize the necessity of a space force to defend the nation and to protect space commerce and civil space exploration. To save the world from space pirates. Ted Cruz, he's a space cowboy. Ready to take care of
this. I'm a cowboy on a rocket, I ride.
See, you have your jacket on. You can sing. There you go. We were talking about this before the show. You got an awesome new jacket. And I said that would be perfect if you were up on stage and you were, you know, performing. And
yeah, they, so for context for the listeners who had missed our pre-recording conversation, right. I went thrift shopping a few days ago, and I have this incredibly cool jacket. I'm going to actually, for people who like, you should clip this section and put it on the Instagram.
I'm going to, yeah, don't worry.
Okay, cool. So for people who follow us on Instagram, you can check out this rad video of like my extremely cool new jacket. I'm so happy.
It's a thrift shop find. It's out of this world. And yeah. And you got swagger right now because you're wearing it. Like you can tell.
I know. As soon as I put this jacket on, I'm just like, ooh, I feel so fucking fresh, dude.
It's like the Emperor's New Groove, you know? And yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And you have actually a pretty cool shirt on right now, too.
Oh, yeah. The shirt that I was saying, because I felt, you know, when you showed me the jacket, I felt inadequate. And so I was like, yeah, well, my mom knows what shirt. My mom got me this for Christmas. It's the Norwals Don't Get Mad, They Get Even. It's one of my favorite shirts.
Yeah, and the image on the shirt, again, it says narwhals don't get mad, they get even. And it's like the narwhals like stabbing like a sailor or fisherman or probably a whaler like through the chest with its horn. Yeah. It's very badass. But it's also kind of cute, which is funny. Anyways, again, go follow us on Instagram.
Yeah.
It's
one of those. It's going to be in the description below, everybody.
It'll be in the show notes. Yes, go check out.
We have so many variations of our name on these accounts that we don't even remember which one's which. So we're just like, yeah, go find it in the description below.
Yeah, yeah. There's like a lot of different ways to shorten the conservationist conversationalist. Right. So none of them like fit in every single type of, you know. We're talking about Ted Cruz and Space Pirates. Okay.
Yeah, so Ted Cruz and Space Pirates, that's right, because that's what we got there. You were singing Bon Jovi. Yeah, so Ted Cruz and Space Pirates. So he believes now. The crazy part is that I believe when he's thinking of pirates, there's no doubt he's thinking Pirates of the Caribbean style pirates, right? He's not actually thinking of modern pirates. Like he's thinking of Blackbeard and I can't remember all their goddamn names. But anyways, like that's what I pictured. Ted's like, you know, feeling that's where he probably sees space pirates as like, I don't know, something from Guardians of the Galaxy or Star Wars.
I really do like to think that that's what he is. I don't know. Like, I don't want to project onto it, but like project onto Ted Cruz. But that's like the only thing I can imagine.
Right. Is he like thinking, or is he thinking like space pirates? They're like these, I don't know, like, you know, Jabba the Hutt style, you know, I don't know, or Ewoks or something from like Twilight Zone, you know? Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. The great part about it is that actually on the, in case you missed it, portion of Sierra Club, they have a great headline for it.
Oh, and, yes.
Which is, let's see if I can go back to here. Yeah. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, a climate denier, climate change denier, I suppose what they meant, is concerned about the threat posed to the nation by space pirates, which is the best low key savage dig they could take at Ted Cruz. Yeah, a climate denier, but he's definitely scared of those space pirates. And, you know, and this all comes down to, it's what we see with Lindsey Graham over and over again, right? Where they see, they at one point, they're like, oh, no, Donald, you've crossed the line, Donnie boy, and we don't stand for that. And then suddenly they realize, oh, wait, we need to potentially save ourselves and save our names for our future in the party. And then they latch on to something stupid that Trump says. You know, Trump has been touting Space Force for how long? And, you know, Cruz is talking about the same shit that Trump has been talking about. Like, we have to, like, get ahead of this. And this was so similar to what Reagan did. But I realized, at least with Reagan, there was at least somewhat of a reason for wanting to start up Star Wars, which was to, you know, because the Cold War was a big thing. We were afraid of, you know, the nuclear threat, blah, blah, blah. I mean, even then, it was ridiculous. Reagan was just trying to appeal to a populist as a populist. But when it comes to Trump basically saying I want to get ahead of, you know, this potential threat of space pirates, I gotta tell you know what, and honestly, if I end up having to like go back on these words one day because I've been attacked by space pirates before climate change has killed us all, I will gladly say, you know what, I was wrong, and here I go off into space with the pirates. But boy, oh boy. Yeah, so that was that's the jungle, everybody. What are your thoughts on space pirates, Aiden?
I find space terrifying.
Do you?
I think that the idea of being attacked by pirates is also terrifying, like in a realistic way. So I feel like space pirates would be pretty terrifying.
Do you think the space pirates, are we talking humanoid space pirates? Are they aliens? Can they speak our language? Are they more intelligent than us, less intelligent than us, more savage, less savage?
I think that they are illegal aliens.
I see what you did there. Just kidding.
I think that that's dehumanizing language to talk about undocumented immigrants, but...
But these would actually be aliens, correct?
Yes, they are undocumented Martians.
Undocumented Martians, yeah. So I don't know what's going on, but...
I also, while you were talking, I just thought about what else Ted Cruz reminds me of, visually speaking. He's like a Ditto, like the Pokemon Ditto, but like Ditto learned how to master the eyes, but then lost the ability to master everything else.
That is very, really, very spot on, actually. It's kind of like if you ever watched like Doom Patrol, which is a DC show on DC streaming, and there's the Elastic Woman, and she like, I'm not going to give the whole backstory, but she ended up like where she like turns into a blob, but she can like bring herself back together, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, yeah, like Ted's gotten most of the way there. But he's still having... Remember that fish, that blob fish? And it looks like Ted Cruz.
Kind of. Yeah. A little, like, if you made a little metal square structure and then draped a blob fish over it.
Like, blob fish with a suit on. And then you're, like, in a little, you know, comb over. And you're like, there's Ted.
God.
Ted's... maybe the blob fish or the aliens we all have to worry about.
Did you see Detective Pikachu?
I did see Detective Pikachu. In my opinion,
Detective Pikachu.
It's the Citizen Kane of this generation. That was amazing. I loved everything about Detective Pikachu.
Good.
It was so great. Like that movie made my week. Not even a question. I love that movie so much. Yeah.
I loved the Detective Pikachu for the same reason that I loved Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, it felt like a movie that was made by people who adore the source material. Like you could feel like how much they like loved it. Like every bit of that movie, like I could tell that this is stuff they've been thinking about for a long time. Like how would Pokemon interact with the real world? And that was just I feel like parts the plot was kind of weak. But I feel like the plot was pretty weak, but I could like it was made up for by like everything else.
I mean that's the thing, right? It wasn't something where your brain needed to act so fast to keep up with it, because it was just something that was given to us as a gift. Like you know, you've been following Pokemon for how many years, whatever, and here's our gift to you finally, Pokemon in the real world, how they would... I love the fact that they had like the Growlithe would be like walking along like dogs in the, you know, on the streets. And then you had, you know, the companions. Oh, like,
also, spoiler alert, I guess, for Detective Pikachu. Like, I don't think we'll be spoiling much of the plot, but like, I feel like part of what makes the movie awesome is like the joy of like seeing how these Pokemon interact with like in the real world on screen. Like, I feel like in some ways it's more important than the plot. So, like, we're going to be talking about that a little bit because I really want to talk about it. And it has nothing to do with conservationism. But you've made a decision to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you expected. Probably conservationism, but whatever.
Well, no, I mean, well, it's like I always say, the conservationist conversationalist is meant to start with conservation and politics, and then, you know, you have whatever. I remember when I was a kid, I used to listen to, and I still do listen to, like, sports radio, and I remember, like, Dan Patrick, one of my favorites, he would talk about sports for a good 20, 30 minutes, and then he would start talking about movies and whatever, and so, you know, that's how conversation gets going. But, no, I loved, and by the way, before, I don't know if you have some more, I think you have some more things to say about Detective Pikachu.
I do.
But what I loved about it, too, was I thought Catherine Newton's character was great, and I felt like she could actually... I know there's supposedly going to be a sequel. I feel like the movie could have revolved around her. I loved the lead Justice actor. Smith. Yeah,
I love Justice Smith. I first saw him in The Get Down. He's so good.
Okay, yeah, he's great. I loved her. I thought you could have had a movie surrounding her as well. She was so great. The casting was perfect in that regard.
She was like the reporter unpaid intern. Yeah, she was fun.
Yeah.
And I also love her, like, her outfit. Like, he looked like Justice Smith's character, Tim. He looked like a regular dude, but she looked like a Pokemon trainer in some of the late. I was like so into that. Like, her costume.
Yeah. And
And it was, I was just gonna say, like, when you were talking about, like, Pokemon interacting with the real world, like, that scene where, like, they're in an underground fight club, and, like, those Pokemon, I don't remember what their names are, but, like, the Pokemon who are, like, pounding out the beats, like, yeah. That was...
Oh, so- the, Loudreds.
Loudreds. Oh, yeah, that was so good.
Yeah, yeah, it was really, really cool, and just the fact, you know, I remember when I was little, they had Super Mario Brothers had a live-action movie that came out, and that was in the 90s, right? And it was terrifying. The fact that they actually came out with a Pokemon movie that they've obviously been working on for a long time, and the fact that live action, they were able to create each individual Pokemon and make them, like, as cute as they are in the games and as awesome as they are in the games, I thought was great. There wasn't one of them where you went, oh my god, that was scary, you know, or whatever. I thought it was just, they was hilarious how they integrated them. It was very, very witty. It was very, very smart. I loved...
Okay, I'm sorry. Wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. The Mankeys, that Mankey scene at the beginning, right? That was scary. That was...
Well, yes, because for people who don't, you know, again, we don't want to give away too much, but obviously they were going crazy because of something that was intense.
A plot device.
Yes. Yeah, and so that was great. I mean, the fact they use them and they use all, you know, whether it was a bird type Pokemon or they would have them all in certain parts of this city. The cityscape was beautiful, and
they were they went to the docks to like meet an informant, and there was a little Rattata that was like crawling around. It was so cute.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was so great, and you know, yeah, I'll admit, like, even at 32 years old, I still, like, I was so jazzed about Pokemon Go Community Day on Sunday, and I was like, I'm not even kidding, my brother and sister-in-law and I usually go out around town and, like, do it together, and we went by this bar, it's like a tiki bar, and my sister-in-law was like, oh, we should go in there. I'm like, are you fucking serious? We've got 2 more hours left of Pokemon Go Community Day. And she's like, you already have 3 shinies, and I'm like, I need double-digit shinies, okay?
I can never play Pokemon Go because I always get distracted and leave the app to like do Sudoku or I'll be like walking to the bus stop, and like that's a perfect opportunity to have it out, but I'll decide to like read an article on Facebook and also not look at the road. Like, I probably should just put Pokemon Go on and then like pay attention to my surroundings, but I can't do that. I just get distracted.
It's gotten to a point where, like, with me and my brother, if I catch a shiny Pokemon, like, because I have a spawn point at my house, which makes it really, really easy as well. And so if I catch a shiny one, I'll send him a screenshot of it. And we've, like, caught ones that the other one hasn't, so usually it pisses him off. And, so, anyways, yeah, Detective Pikachu, always subtle nuances in every single movie, by the way, that do pertain to certain times. So none of these things are completely exclusive to what we talk about. But mostly just a genuinely make your brain feel better type of movie. Go and watch Detective Pikachu. It's fantastic. And by the way, you had mentioned Spider-Man. What was the actual name, the full name of it?
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
The Spider-Verse, which I was so afraid because you were such a huge fan of it. I thought, if I watch it, I don't like it, how am I going to be like, you know, it was all right.
Impossible to not like that movie.
Good. That movie was really, really good. I finally watched it, and it was insanely good. Yeah, very, very well done.
Like, legit, I think my favorite movie of all time.
It's up there. I mean, when it comes to animated movies especially, yeah, I think it's one of the best animated movies I've ever watched. And it was incredibly done. So, yeah, that was a great movie. I'm sure a lot of people have already watched it, but for me, I was a little later to the party. I was like, I wanted to watch Detective Pikachu before. I still haven't seen the new Avengers or any of those. Like, I was like, nope, I want to see Detective Pikachu. And it was fantastic. And Ryan Reynolds is great. He's not always great as an actor, but in the roles that he's meant for, which in this case he was, Ryan Reynolds is always great. And he is born just a few minutes away from me.
That's very cool. Fun fact, one of my half-siblings, one of my donor siblings, looks just like Ryan Reynolds.
Really? There are a lot of girls listening right now who are going, and guys, who are going, oh my gosh, please get me his number.
He gets that all the time, though. Like, he's not going to be impressed, like, I'm sure. I actually don't talk to him very often. Like, I probably exchange, like, 5 words to him. and then a few in our group chat, I guess. But Lee, if you're listening, hi. The only thing I know about you is that your name is Lee and you look exactly like Ryan Reynolds. I'm sorry.
Hi, does he sound like Ryan Reynolds? Can he do the one of my friends, but now I think about it, he doesn't look like Bob from Bob's Burgers, but one of my friends, her boyfriend, he sounds just like Bob from Bob's Burgers, and it's cool. I love to hear him talk whenever she's on the phone because it's sort of like Bob. Anyways, where are we? So do we want to talk about, there was an interesting article, and the reason is, I think, is because it is odd how the whole world is progressing compared to other countries, countries compared to other countries. And Denmark, which we always see as this very progressive, liberal country, oddly enough, their recent study lists them as one of the lowest percentage of feminists in the world. Does that surprise you, Aiden? And if not, well, why?
The lowest percentage of like self-described feminists, right. And like Denmark like has like a lot more like gender equality in other areas, but they like rated themselves as I felt like this study was pretty limited because it seemed to look at just a few factors, like did they self-identify as feminists, like did they identify with the feminist movement as a political movement, did they have favorable or unfavorable views of the Me Too movement, and did they appreciate being whistled at?
Right. And that was the one that kind of grabbed me, the reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, so basically they, like, most people said that they didn't self-identify as feminists, had unfavorable views or neutral views of the Me Too movement. They liked being whistled at, like they viewed it more as a compliment. Mm-hmm. Which I think I feel like those are like three very shallow metrics in some ways. Like, I don't think that necessarily says a lot about like the society as a whole. It just says something about that particular ways in which they identify or do not identify with political movements.
Well, and it could show something else, right? It could actually show more about the society than we realize, which is that because of the way Denmark is equal, and maybe because certain things, like, even though I still just can't see ever being a fan of catcalling and wolf whistling, maybe because it is done with a more lighthearted intention over there, whereas over here we have developed a culture that is very dominating, especially male culture, and even what a lot of people consider a rape culture. That could be a large part as to why they don't identify this way, because maybe they culturally they're not at that same place as we are, right? And especially if they've always felt that they were more equal when it came to things like equal pay, which Denmark is, that's why they don't see any reason to identify as something different, I suppose, than what the country has given them, right? Yeah. And so maybe it does say something about it culturally. I still find it's crazy to think of from our standpoint here in the US, right? Because we've watched as, you know, the patriarchy, which can involve women. We've seen it with Alabama because with the governor and the bill that was brought into Alabama. But the patriarchy in general has been in control tried to be in control of women. And, you know, at the end of the day as well, even it takes control of whatever they can, including men. But obviously women are at the forefront of what the rights they're trying to take away. And I wonder if that's why it's so unique to us to see it from our point of view, what Denmark is thinking. Because to me, I read some of those things, and especially with the Me Too movement, like that shocks me that any country would be like, they don't have a favorable impression, because you just think like that movement was so necessary for what was going on in this country, right? What's been going on in this country. And then of course the wolf whistling one. And, you know, it's weird because I've talked to women from generations ago who don't see wolf whistling and cat calling as a bad thing. They see it as a compliment of sorts, but that's just not this generation, I don't believe, because I, for one, as a guy, find it to be, I hate seeing guys do it. I've seen it happen and I kind of, you know, get mad. And even as a guy, the few times, which we know it doesn't happen as much girl to guy, but even the few times where somebody has done that to me, it's been uncomfortable, if I'm being honest. Not all of us, just because some of us do take it as a compliment doesn't mean that everybody does, which is why I think you should just be respectful. At least that's my take.
Yeah. And one of the things that the article talked about was Danish people, and I don't know anything about Danish culture and history. I'm just going what this Guardian article was saying. But the article was saying that Danish people view intention as being more important than impact. Like, even if, like, if it said that, like, if a guy, like, grabs a woman, like, if the intent is viewed playfully, then that's viewed as okay. Whereas if their intent was harmful, that would be viewed as okay. Whereas I feel like in America, at least in our current political discourse, or at least our leftist discourse, impact is viewed as greater than intent. Like, if you just grab somebody, it doesn't matter, like, whether or not you meant to hurt them or if you're just trying to play with them. Like, if you grab somebody that you don't know, that's not okay.
Right.
So, like, the impact that could have on somebody is given more value than the potential intent, which personally I think is stronger. Like, you, because, like otherwise, like, a guy could, like grab somebody to intimidate them or to, like, assert power or dominance over them, but then, like, say, like, oh, it was just a playful thing.
Which they do. Which
totally. They totally do that in America too. I like last week I was at a bar and, like, a guy offered to buy me a drink and I said no thank you. We had been, like, talking about my podcast, like, and other stuff, and like the history of the bar, and then offered to buy me a drink. I didn't want a drink. I had my one drink. I was planning on buying a second drink, like, half an hour later for myself. I was set. And I don't like to take drinks from strangers because if you take a drink from a stranger without knowing them, like, is it really free? Like, you don't really know who they are, exactly, what they might expect of you.
Yeah.
So I just declined. And then he said, like, no, I want to buy you a drink. And I said, like, no, thank you, I'm good. And they said, like, let me buy you a drink. And I was like, I don't want a drink. And then he said, like, I won't be happy unless I buy you a drink. And I said that, I told him that, that if he's basing his happiness on external factors, like whether or not you can buy a girl a drink, then he should do some self-reflecting, which made the bartender laugh. And, like, let me just tell you, like, there's no better feeling than making a cute bartender laugh, especially when it's, like, a cute, cool-looking bartender. If they overhear something you say and start cracking up,
right,
like, oh my god, the sense of pride. That's not relevant. That's just
anyway, so no, it's true, I guess.
I told him you should look inward, and then he goes, like, I don't want to look inward, I want to look outward at you. And I'm like,
oh my god.
And then, like, that's nice, I still don't want you to drink. And he goes, if I will go to bed and I won't be able to sleep tonight. And
oh my god, fuck off, dude.
It took so long. And then he goes to the bartender who's overhearing some of this and is like, I'm buying her a drink. And I'm like, no, he's not. And she looks at me and she's like, the poor lady, like, does not know what the fuck to do. Like, she's like so uncomfortable. And I'm like, I don't want this drink. I don't want a drink. I'm not going to drink a drink. He's not buying me a drink. I can buy my own drinks. Thank you very much. And eventually, he leaves, but it took literally probably 7 to 10 minutes of that back and forth.
It's
infuriating. Like, I don't care if your intent was to just, like, buy a cute girl a drink. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And it's funny, I wrote an article for Lemonade Magazine, which, you know, we talk about the podcast I do away from this, and Lemonade Magazine essentially spun off of Lemonade Magazine, this podcast, when I first started it. And I wrote this article based on the fact that it was during the Me Too movement. And the article was based on the fact that, you know, a lot of guys at the time were saying, oh, it's not a big deal if you do this or do that. And again, going back to what I was saying earlier about the fact that not everybody responds to certain gestures the same way. And I know it's 100 times worse for women than it is for guys, but in the few times where I've had to deal with something like that as a guy, for instance, one time when I was at a bar, a girl decided she was going to sit down and give me a lap dance. And I told her, no, I don't want this. I'm good. And she goes, I am not leaving your lap. And I'm like, no, like, seriously, I do not want you to do this. And she would not leave until I lied and said that there was my girlfriend was down, was coming up the stairs. And she would not leave.
So angry. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. And so, because it's uncomfortable. A lot of guys, sure, they might sit there and go, hey, what do I care? You know, she's giving me a free lap dance. But for me, I don't like that. And yeah, I've been grabbed twice, once in the rear end, once in the crotch at concerts. I know, like I said, for women, it's 100 times worse. The fact that I can count it on one hand is a blessing. But both of those times, it wasn't like, oh my god, this is hilarious, that was playful. I thought it was uncomfortable. It wasn't something that you felt good about, you know, or you were just like, honestly, if you thought I was attractive or whatever, please talk to me and let's have a decent conversation or whatever. But that's ridiculous, you know, respect.
Yeah, your hands to yourself. Yeah. I don't know what's so hard about that.
Right. It's like, just respect each other, like, for crying out loud. So yeah, I mean, I think that's what the thing is. I get that, you know, sometimes older generations tend to have this thought, oh, well, you just got to take it, you know, that it was just something playful or it was just a compliment, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's probably, it seems like, where Denmark is coming from. And who are we to judge Denmark? They have better, they have a better setup government-wise than we do. But I think that's why there's a fundamental difference between this country and theirs when it comes to that, is because I don't think people have learned, especially not men, I don't think men have learned here, that there's, I don't even think they know what their intent is half the time. And if they do, subconsciously, it's predatory. And I think that's where the issue comes in. So yeah, but that was, yeah, they were one of the, I think Mexico was below them. There's only two countries below them.
Mexico and Germany are right below them.
Yeah. And so that was the news there this week. What else do we have? There was a couple other things we were talking about before the show started.
Oh yes, I know. I am finding. Oh yes, okay. So this is another article that we found from the Sierra Club, in case you missed it, news blast. Loud electronic dance music from the Ultra Music Fest at Virginia Key, Florida causes a significant stress response in fish swimming nearby. And that's, I just said, like, you read that at the beginning of, before we started recording, and I just read that and I was like, if I was at like a fun rave, an EDM dance party, I think I called it, and like if I got a Sierra Club like newsletter on my phone or like an article and it popped up saying that like, oh, there's a music festival in this area and it's causing a significant stress response in nearby fish, that would fucking break me.
Right.
I would ruin my night. I'd be like, I can't have fun anymore. I'm thinking about these fish.
I love your description of the party. That's that made me feel a lot younger right now. No, I totally get what you're saying. And then you try, by the way, we should start taping like the beginning of what we're discussing this show.
We should just start recording. Yeah. As soon as we start the
call. Like, put that on YouTube. Like, oh, here is our pre-show. But yeah, what we were talking about was that, cause I was recently, Bellingham had its, we talked about it last week at the end a little bit, but Bellingham had its largest concert ever, in Whatcom County here. And it was Death Cab for Cutie and Odessa, who are both from Bellingham. They went to school at Western Washington University here in Bellingham, and they're from different parts of Washington. And and Odessa, I don't consider them rave type music, but there are a lot of rave kids there because they are more EDM style. And I love Odessa, by the way, and I'm not a rave kid.
Whenever I see Odessa, I don't think I've ever, I may have listened to like one Odessa song, but like whenever I see Odessa, I always think it's Ode SZA. And I always mentally picture Odessa, or in my mind, Odessa SZA, as like SZA's like older brother.
I saw SZA last year. Whoa, I just about knocked over my mic. Sorry, everybody.
This is really cute. I haven't listened to her music. I've heard she's good, but she's cute. I've seen photos of her.
She was fun, like, to see in concert. And see, there's like, for another day. But yeah, there was like this great like waterfall at Bumbershoot, and they had like the video projection on the waterfall fountain, and on the fountain, and there was SZA. Like, you could watch her on the water fountain, or you could go watch her on the stage. Anyways, but yeah, so Odessa, or Ode SZA, as you would say. I love Odessa. So their sound is just like, oh man. Like, I am like one of those, like, I probably look like an idiot listening to it, 'cause it's like, I feel that music. I love it so much. And I'm not a rave kid. It's not rave music.
Okay.
I don't dress up in like, you know, the fluorescent, colors and all that, but good for those people who do.
I desperately want to see you dress up in fluorescent colors now. Okay. I want to see you in rave attire. Oh, that'd be so fucking funny.
But I love them, and I love Death Cab for Cutie, but you were like, I'm like, oh, we were nowhere near the ocean, so we were definitely not affecting any fish. And you were like, but were there woodland creatures near where you were? And then it got me thinking, oh my gosh, there are deer around. Did the deer not like it?
Were there chipmunks? Were there like any native songbirds? Like I've heard that like loud concerts can be distressing to nearby songbirds. That distresses me in return.
I know it does. I feel like I didn't see any distressed songbirds, but then again, I was, you know, not looking, and I feel bad. There were skater kids across the street, and they were really smart because we paid good money to watch this concert, and they were all like, we can watch from the skate park for free. So the skater kids, they knew what they were doing. They're smart. Yeah, so I do apologize to any woodland animals that the concert did affect. It's like the first outdoor concert Bellingham has had, like, ever, I think, when that magnitude. So I do apologize for just one day. But they did have a vegan food truck there, which I mentioned last week, Sage Against the Machine. I don't know if Sage Against the Machine is listening, but they did comment on our Instagram post the other day. And so if they are listening, guys, you rock. And they sold out by 9:30. The line was huge there. So anybody that thinks veganism and vegan food trucks can't work, those guys were killing it. And they had a huge line. I had their cilantro lime burrito, and it was amazing. They crunched up tortilla chips inside of the burrito, and it gave it this crunch with beans and baby spinach. And oh, God, so good. So fantastic. They sold out by 9:30 that evening. That's how busy they were. So yeah, big shout out to Sage Against the Machine and your wonderful, wonderfully named business, by the way. Yeah. So Aiden, by the way, is checking out her jacket right now for those of you who cannot see what's going on. Yep. And she has every right to.
I kind of want to like get like a cool like a black scarf or something to like go into here, but then I would cover up some of the pattern.
I mean, that pattern is fantastic. I love the color too, because it's like both like vibrant and also subtle.
I know. Oof, I'm just feeling myself so much. We should start putting the podcast, like the video section of the podcast, on YouTube.
Yeah,
so that people can see more of the jacket.
It's so funny too, because like I was gonna say, that people will be able to tell, like, there's, at least for me, and I might be an idiot, but the top of your cage back there, I keep thinking that the blanket on top, it looks like the shape of a corgi, and I keep thinking there's a corgi on top of your cage, and there's not.
Does not look anything like a corgi.
Okay, well, that's what I'm seeing out of
the blue blanket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's blue, first of all.
Okay, well, yes, but I'm thinking like the corgi's like underneath the blanket or something. It's what it looks like to me. Out of the corner of my eye, I'm like, corgi, and then no, it's not. So I'm not high, everybody, I swear. By the way, here I am telling you I'm not a rave kid, and then I forgot that I'm like wearing fluorescent yellow in my hair right now. From another great, it reminded me because of the name of Sage Against the Machine. We were also talking about another great name for a company, Hayley Williams from Paramore. Good Die Young, but DYE.
Yeah.
I have it.
She's vegan. It's a vegan and cruelty free hair product line. Yeah. And the website's really cool, and there's a lot of cute girls on it. So,
It's great. I know we were talking about before because I said my mom knows my t-shirt. Taste with the narwhal t-shirt, but I said she, one thing she doesn't know is my taste in significant others. And she'll like point out a girl and she'll be like, oh, she's your type. And I'll be like, no, she's not my type, mom. And then you're like, what's your type? And I said, I don't have a type. And then you went on to Good Die Young, and I'm like, oh, that's right, Hayley Williams is my type. So anyway, are we ready to go into what was great that we saw just in the world around the internet this week?
Yeah, but you're going to have to start.
I'm going to have to start? Okay. Well, what I want to say what is great, that because you know that I always talk about how I go to the Seattle Seawolves rugby games, right? And you know I'm a huge rugby fan. So what they've been doing is, and I'm there, by the way, I want to say when I say this, it's not because of me, okay? But the Seattle Sounders, who are a soccer team here in Seattle, they recently unveiled their mascot as Sammy the Sounder, who's an orca. The mascot for the Seattle Seawolves is Rucky, and he's an orca as well. And the mascot for the Vancouver Canucks hockey team up in Vancouver.
Let me guess, is it an orca?
Yeah, his name is Finn. So you got Finn, Sammy, and Rucky. And Finn's got a great, like, tribal drum that he plays, and he's awesome. Finn's just a great personality. Sammy is very new. I haven't met Sammy yet, but I will see him if I ever go to another Sounders game here soon. I'll be going to a Sounders game in July, maybe one before then, who knows. Rucky, on the other hand, Rucky and I are buds. Rucky will come by where I watch the games, and he will come by. He gives the most killer high fives, and he, like, bam, just nails the high five. And I love Rucky. Rucky is, I feel like me and Rucky are great friends. So I said to them, though, I put on Twitter, I said, it'd be great, you know, now that we've got, like, Finn and Rucky and Sammy, if all the teams could come together and start, you know, talking about the southern resident orca whales that are hitting, you know, very, very bad numbers here. You know, we're down to 74 whales, I believe, which is in 96, I want to say, around that time, the mid-90s, they were at 98 whales. So they've lost a significant number of whales. The babies are not surviving past their youth. And so the Seawolves said, hey, something's in the works. And sure enough, they both have had a booth at the games regarding the orcas and how you can help the orcas. And they've mm-hmm. even been on TV discussing the southern resident whales. So good on the Seattle Seawolves, the rugby team, which I have season tickets to. I just re-upped my season tickets yesterday for also caring about the community and what the southern resident orcas mean to the community here in Washington State.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
I always forget that we do a good thing at the end of the episode.
It's the one thing that I'm prepared for.
Yeah. And I'm prepared for nothing. God.
Well, how about you get, do you have any people to give a shout out to?
I there's a game that I've been playing a lot lately. I've been okay. playing it on stream, but I think that it's just a cool game in general. It's called Baba Is You. Have okay. I talked about it on the podcast before?
If you have, I don't remember it.
Okay, well, it's called Baba Is You. It's this game where you have there's like two parts of the game. There's like the elements of the world, like the walls and the rocks and the okay. water and your character Baba. Okay. And then there's text which form rules, like Baba Is You. But you as Baba can manipulate the text. So like there could be a text that says like rock is push, and then a different piece of text that says Baba Is You. But if you take the word rock from rock is push, which would allow you to push the rock as opposed to just walking over it, if you take that rock and put it in place of Baba and Baba Is You, then it becomes rock is you, and then you become the rock and you can move around as the rock instead. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It's a crazy. Where do people come up with these ideas?
I don't know. It's really interesting. If you're good at computer programming logic, the puzzles are very difficult. Okay. I can say, like, they start out fairly simple, but still challenging. But then they get increasingly complex. And I've heard that there's also some narrative to it. Like right now, it's just like different puzzles in different situations.
Okay.
But apparently, there is a narrative to it. And last night on stream, I started this level in this new section of this game, and it introduced these like crazy new mechanics. Like it introduced a command called like empty. So like there was like a line that said empty is Baba, which means that every time there was any empty space on the board, it mm-hmm. was filled with, it was populated with a new Baba. Wow. And I was Baba. So every time I moved out of that empty space, the space would become empty and then a new Baba would appear. So it was just Baba's multiplying. Baba's like a little dog-ish looking creature. It's okay. like a little like blob. It's just called a Baba. Okay. And so like all of a sudden there were like a couple dozen Babas on screen and they were all moving and then all like, it was like crazy. And I started to like push a rock over when there were like dozens of me and I like couldn't get it like organized. But yeah, it was wild. You can like,
that's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, like if there's like a rule that says wall is stop, but you could possibly change it to like if a rule says wall is stop and you can't change that, you might be able to add something else to that says wall is rock or something. So the entire, every bit of wall in the level turns into a rock instead. And if you don't have anything that says rock is stopped, then you can just walk over it because it's not a wall anymore. And so there's nothing stopping you. It's intense. It's
that
like
is crazy.
The trailer. It's really, it's like mind boggling. It's stressed me out a few times, but it's also just like consistently amazing. Like the way it pushes your brain so far outside of the box.
No, that's crazy. I love puzzle style games. So that does sound like, it sounds like a little bit anxiety inducing, but also really, really crazy good, crazy cool. That's people are smart as hell. I saw like one of the free games this, it's amazing how people are like making games, you know, for, cause it's all downloadable content and such. And on PS4, PS Plus or whatever is their, you know, their subscription service. And one of the free games was like about this person who you have to find out, you play the person has to find out why you're the only person out of the family who's still alive, which is kind of scary. But I mean, like, but it's a group of people, probably an independent, I don't know all the details about that one, but a lot of these games are independent, video game creators who are creating these really crazy concepts for games. I feel like it started before Goat Simulator, but you know, Goat Simulator became this thing that was, you know,
Goat crazy. Simulator started indie games.
Yeah, but you know, but that was like one game that like was so out there as an idea, and that no game company was going to give them, you know, the green light to let's make this. So they're like, well, fuck it, then we're just gonna make Goat Simulator anyways by ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Goat Simulator became this gigantic, you know, cult hit. But yeah, so Baba Is You for everybody who, and that's, what is that available on?
It's available on a lot of stuff. It's available on Switch. I think it was originally a Switch game, but it's also available on PC and probably other stuff. It's like $15, It's $15, but playing like just the main game takes like 4 hours. And then if you want to do it, like if you want to play every level, then it can take like a few, like a dozen or more hours. Like, so you get a lot of content out of that $15.
Okay. Yeah. $15 is not that bad either, considering if you get like actual, you know, large makers of games, you know, they charge you $60 to $80 for games these days. So
yeah,
15's worth.
I mean, and like a lot of those games, they're designed so you get like, you play them for like 80 hours, which I don't want to do. But like a game that you can play start to finish, and like I've been playing it for like 5 to 6 hours on stream so far, and I don't think I've been making a lot of progress. I've been making some progress, but I feel like it's probably gonna take me twice as long to, like,
that's why I love, like, I will download games on my phone that are like puzzle games or whatever, because they literally never end. Like, they just keep on going and going and going and going, and it keeps my brain kind of going, I hope. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, thank you so much again for listening this week. Again, this is the Conservationist Conversationalist, Aiden Wood with Brandon Anyert here, and one of us has a great new jacket, and it's not me. And so yeah, thank you for listening. Aiden has another podcast. It's called Dibs. How's Dibs doing, and where can people listen, Aiden?
Yeah, so Dibs is doing pretty good. It's a podcast about sperm donation and eventually egg donation. I haven't done any episodes about egg donation yet, but I'm getting there, I swear. But it's also about like non-traditional families, and it's about like the way our, I feel like the concept of family is like a really interesting like benchmark as to how the different forces that are like influencing a culture. Like when you think about like what makes up a family, there's so many different factors. There's like your personal beliefs, there's genetics, of course, there's who you're raised with, but then there's also your religion, there's your cultural background. Like, is a family just like parents and kids, or does that include cousins and grandparents, and friends, or like family friends that can be incorporated into a family structure? I feel like, and so much more, like science and technology, like the way sperm donation and sperm banks have risen up, or genetic testing has become a thing. Like, all of these things are shifting our cultural notions of family in really unique and complex ways. So it's kind of a podcast about that, which sounds pretentious as fuck, but you know, I've got a cool jacket on, so I can be as pretentious as I fucking want to be.
Well, the podcast is great, and you know, yeah, actually I think one of the most unique parts about your podcast too, and probably about the whole subject, is the fact that with genetic testing, it's, things are not as anonymous as people would have liked them to be years ago. I did a genetic test a couple of years ago, and every week I get new relatives that pop up that I didn't know. Oh yeah, that pop up on the, you know, some of them might be like third, fourth cousins, but sometimes there's like one that's like a first cousin. You're like, what? I didn't know I had that cousin there. I have way more family in Brazil and New Zealand than I realize. It's crazy.
That's crazy. That's actually the first thing I've ever heard that's made me curious about doing a genetic test. Like, I have no interest in that. Like, I don't know. I don't want to hand my DNA over to some company. Like,
right? Yeah.
Especially it's like people, okay, like, I'm not going to say this on like my actual podcast because like it's like professional and like I try to reduce the amount of my own opinions that I share. I want to mostly share the history and then right. other people's opinions. But I don't know. I get why people do genetic tests, especially if they're donor conceived and they have like a dozen half siblings they don't know about, or they've never met their biological father and they're curious, or if they're adopted and they want to try and find other relatives. Like, I get that, but also like it's a really new industry. Like it came about in 2005 when the, like yeah. genetics started, and like a lot of people like criticized the sperm banks and the sperm donation industry as a whole and the fertility industry as a whole for moving too fast and not thinking about like the longer lasting impacts that that like different fertility industry practices could have on children, families, and even more than that, like societies. But people like didn't think about that. Like when they were first doing artificial insemination, they just wanted to make a quick buck. I don't feel comfortable like just jumping into like a genetic test, like without actual like more research. But I guess like we will only get that research or understanding once more people do it. But there's like yeah. already concerns about like what are they using? What could they use the information for? Could
yeah.
they hand it over to the police? Like, is this like a next step towards a police state? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's when I did it, you know, my whole, I was just very curious because my background is very, very mixed. And I was like, oh, is there going to be something crazy that we didn't know about or whatever? And really there's not, you know, it's funny because there are two separate ones, 23andMe, which is what I went through. And it gave pretty much what we knew, that there's a lot of Portuguese and Spanish, there's a lot of French, and there's a lot, and then there was a significant amount of English and Irish as well. And it was actually, you can send in your results to also ancestry.com, and which is what I did as well. And that's the one that will actually show you where you have DNA relatives around the world. And I think the crazy thing is when you think about, for instance, my Portuguese background, that is transcendent to Latin America. So that's why it's weird to think that in Brazil and in even Mexico, mm-hmm. and that there's actually quite a few DNA relatives there because of that background, that European background that I have. And so that part was actually kind of cool. And then the fact that you think about too, with the little bit of English and Irish, is that that's why I have more family in New Zealand than I realized, because there's, you know, there's history that dates back to that.
Yeah, and, I don't know, it's just so wild how we're all connected in these like
right?
deep and mysterious ways. Like, it's like so profound on one hand, but then on the other hand, like a lot of this stuff like doesn't necessarily, unless like you find out that like your dad isn't your biological dad and you have like right. genetic health issues. Like, there's like in, when you're talking about donor conception, there is a lot of stuff that can come up that can impact your day to day life. But for a lot of people, like there's like this abstract theoretical like concept of like what a family is, or like the history, or like how we got here, our genealogy. Like, there's all this stuff that like has impacted where we got here, but it doesn't necessarily, like, you don't think about that day to day, like as you're going to the grocery store. Like,
yeah,
it's just crazy. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And it's yeah, it was kind of like, it was a fun thing for me. There is that part of me, like you said, that is where you do go, you know, am I comfortable with them having my DNA? At that point, I was like, I remember it was like me and my friend actually did it around Christmas. And because they had like this deal if you bought two. And so I sent her one and then I kept one. And I was like, you know what? I mean, fuck it. Let's just see where it goes. And hers was crazy because she had so many different parts of her background. Like, I knew that she had that she was part Native, and that she had Mexican roots, but she thought she had German roots, and there was no German roots in there, that at least in the test. And but she had
maybe she's donor conceived and she doesn't know it. I wonder if her parents.
But her Native roots, that I think was the most intriguing to me, because you see where those Native roots go to, from all the way from Canada down through South America. And it's crazy to think of how linked all the Americas are, actually, you know, and we, yet borders have defined what we are, what we're all considered. And so very, very, that was interesting. That part of it was. And so, yeah. But anyways, so yeah, everybody go listen to Dibs Welcome to the family. That is Aiden's podcast. My other podcast is Lemonade Magazine's podcast. It's got music. We actually had, I think, like our best week last week was the Cara Connolly takeover. And we had hundreds of downloads, which I know for some of you big podcasts, you have thousands and that's cool. But for us, we just like only a few months in and I like, it's crazy. It was really, really awesome to see that. And so, yeah, you can go listen to Lemonade Magazine's podcast on iTunes, Podcoin, and Google Play. And you can listen to the Conservationist Conversationalist on all those as well. You can earn some coins on Podcoin, which is a great deal if you love listening to podcasts. Yeah, you can listen to Aiden's. Also, yours is on Spotify as well, right?
Yes, yes, yes. On basically all major podcasting platforms.
Yeah, which so is Conservationist Conversationalist. It is also on Spotify, of course. We've talked about this before. Lemonade Magazine is not because it's a music podcast, so you cannot listen to it there. But
I haven't recorded the voiceover for. Okay, so I was the latest episode of Dibs was supposed to go out today, and I didn't finish it because I underestimated the amount of work that this editing would take, and I postponed it until Monday night when it was supposed to be out Tuesday morning. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, I've written the voiceover, which I'm going to record after we end this call. And I am giving a shout out to the Conservationist Conversationalist. Finally on the show, I keep forgetting to do that. Like, cause I keep writing my voiceover at 1 a.m. on Monday night. And I'm just like, okay, I just gotta just record a podcast.
You've already done so much so, because I know you put it up there on your like Twitch or whatever and all those, and we have like more and more downloads each week. And so thank you, by the way, to those of you who are subscribing and downloading. We're happy to have you listening to our ramblings and our conversations. So,
it validates my self-esteem so much.
Same here. So yeah, thank you to everybody, and we will be back next week. Later. Stay dope.